From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these streets. So today is a very, very special Sunday because today is my godbaby Shasha's 5th birthday, a milestone, if you will. And I just want to take this time to shout her out and to tell her that Nenen loves you. And I'm so proud of the little girl she's become. Shasha is so brilliant. She's one of the sweetest babies you will ever meet. And I also wanted to just thank her parents for being such great parents, right? A lot of times, you know, we shout out the kids and we forget that there were parents that molded them into the people that they're becoming. So shout out to my work wife, Marley, and her husband, Kenny, for raising such a brilliant, such a sweet, sweet, sweet child. So again, happy 5th birthday, Shasha. Nenen loves you. So today we have an amazing show. All of the shows are amazing, but you know how I love to just call everything amazing. So today we have a great show, an amazing show. We have two guests by the name of Audace Garnett and Evelyn Hicks, who are going to talk about domestic violence. So for those of you who are not aware, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And every year, according to RP, we do a DV special where we talk about domestic violence and how you can get help and how we as the community can support our victims and survivors. Today, we're going to get into it a little deeper, right? So we are going to talk about what domestic violence is. However, we are going to also focus on two groups that are seldomly mentioned in the domestic violence conversation. That's men and the youth. So men experience domestic violence at the hands of women, and there is teen domestic violence. The youth are going through domestic violence struggles. I used to work at the DA's office in Brooklyn, and I worked in domestic violence, and we had a separate youth court, youth domestic violence division that I, you know, was fortunate enough to work in. And I was able to see these cases and handle them. And so we are going to talk about that today, men experiencing domestic violence as well as the youth. Now, before we get too deep into the show, before we get into the meat, we have our preliminaries. We know that we have skimped out on them in the last couple of weeks, but today we are bringing back the preliminary. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Hopping on fleek, you lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is detective. The morning after a hard night of partying, when one has to go through their text messages and piece together the activities from the night before. Taking the text clues and putting together what happened. Example, dude, I have to do some detective work. I woke up this morning with some inappropriate pictures from a stranger. Next example, after some detective work, I realized I slept in a bush for about 2 hours. Then I walked to Rite Aid alone. Now, I'm not condoning being so drunk out of your mind that you cannot remember what happened the night before. However, I would dare to say that most people at some point in their life has had some sort of experience, right? Whether it was through their own acts or unfortunately, maybe the acts of others. Either way, this texting, this detective thing is actually a thing. You know, oftentimes I take issue with Urban Dictionary because some of their definitions nobody is using. It makes no sense. But this one right here, detective, I find it to be valid. I deem it to be valid. And that is your word or phrase of the week. So it is now time for the Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week. So this week's Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week is nenen. You guys heard me use this before, I think. Yes, I did. I had brain fart. Anyways, I just used the word nenen when I was giving my birthday shout out to my special, special god baby. So nenen means godmother. Nenen is actually short for marraine, and marraine means godmother. So, you know, a short version of saying marraine is nenen. So my god baby, Shasha, calls me nenen, and you know, that's basically how it goes. You have a godmother, you call her nenen. Not many people refer to, you know, the full phrase and say, oh, this is my marraine. But nenen is kind of like the short version of saying godmother. Marraine in French is like my queen. So I guess then we are referring to godmothers as queen. So I guess I will accept that title as queen. But nenen means godmother, and that is your Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week. Watch it. When you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. What? So this week's big up goes to this group of amazing individuals. The group's name, the organization's name, or the upcoming organization's name is DREP, which is D-R-E-P. That stands for Disaster Relief Emergency Preparedness. It's an initiative that I had started, I guess, in August when the earthquake hit Haiti. Myself, along with Councilmember Farrell Lewis and Dr. Mona Lisa Ferrari, have come together to really grow this now about to be organization called DREP. And the reason that I'm giving this big up is because many of you know that there was a crisis at the border when it came to the Haitian migrants. And a lot of these brothers and sisters are currently in the New York, New Jersey area. And we have been working tirelessly to make sure that we are meeting the needs of our brothers and sisters through housing, through legal, through medical, through education, food, clothing. I mean, this operation was really supposed to be a committee, and it's morphed into something that I would have never anticipated in such a short time. And that is thanks to the members of the community, not just in New York, but in New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, even Miami. We have people within our group chats, because we're operating on WhatsApp. That is the international way of communicating. But we are literally working with people from a variety of organizations across, you know, the state, across the country. And what I love to see is the collaboration, because oftentimes you hear that Black people, we don't work well together. We don't know how to get together, especially within the Haitian community. We don't know how to come together. And this organization, this DREP initiative, is dispelling all of those myths. And I mean, we are working around the clock tirelessly, literally around the clock, to meet the needs of our people. And I just want to thank all of you who are part of DREP. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the work that you're doing. It definitely, you know, taking off some pressure off of myself, because you guys are stepping up to the plate. So thank you so much. And for those of you who are tuning in, who are like, what is this DREP thing? How do I get involved? I want to help. Send us a DM at According to RP on Instagram. You could send an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com, or you can send an email to our official website with DREP, which is info@drepsupport.org. But just wanted to big up this group that's doing amazing things. So with every high, you guys know that there is a low. And unfortunately, this is one of those womp womps where I don't even know if it's a 100% womp womp. You know, here and there, I'll ask you guys to weigh in as to whether or not we should be condemning this practice or, you know, minding our business. So in East Lansing, Michigan, the East Lansing Public School System has decided to permanently cancel Halloween and Valentine's Day activities in order to not hurt the feelings of children whose parents don't want them to participate. Either way, the article stated that there are children who feel overwhelmed and sometimes frightened by Halloween costumes. And with respect to Valentine's Day, there are concerns that boys and girls should not be participating in celebrations that focus on love. I am just beside myself because what is happening to our generation? What is happening to our society? Like this, how did we become so sensitive, right? I'm really concerned for the future of this world, to be very honest. Now, I feel like I have the authority to speak on this because I am one of those kids who were excluded from a lot of these activities. I grew up Seventh-day Adventist. I still proclaim to be Seventh-day Adventist. And we did not believe in Halloween. My mother said it was the devil's holiday. And in fact, she did not send us to school many of times on Halloween. And we did not wear costumes. I've never worn a costume in my life. You know, I think I did sneak one time to go trick-or-treating, but it was not condoned to go trick-or-treating. With Valentine's Day, she didn't really care so much. We knew that, you know, it was a pagan holiday. We didn't really participate. But, you know, in terms of sending cards to classmates and collecting candy, she didn't have a problem with that. But I say all that to say this. I know what it means to be excluded because I could not participate in Friday night activities. I could not participate in a lot of things because of my religion. And I was often, you know, the outsider. But I feel like it's made me who I am today because the reality is that you are not always going to be included. You are not always going to be part of the fold. And I feel like we are taking away that aspect. We're taking away that teaching moment by making everything so neutral. And I feel like we are just enabling these kids to be more and more sensitive, more and more, I don't even know what the word is, but you know, this idea that everything has to be like the same and that there can't be differences is absurd to me. And because some kids feel some type of way, I mean, that is life. You are not always going to be included. There are going to be things that you are not going to be able to participate because of your personal choice or the choice of your parents, right? And that's okay. Some of you guys might think, though, that you know what? It's about time that they take out Halloween and Valentine's Day and these holidays in school. But I feel like for the reasons, you know, kids are afraid of costumes. They're overwhelmed. We don't want to celebrate love or encourage participation in celebrating love. Like, what is this? Those of us who grew up in the era where this was okay, we are fine. None of us are screwed up because we were kept out of a Halloween party or a Valentine's Day celebration. We're fine. And so I am concerned about the future generation. I am concerned about all of this. So I don't know what you guys think. This is one of those, you know, moments where I'm like, hey, what do you guys think? Is it team too much? Is it a little extra what Lansing, Michigan is doing? Or is this something that it's about time, right? So you could send your messages, your inquiries, your responses, your opinions to According to RP on Instagram, slip up in my DM, or send an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com and let's talk about it further. With that being said, guys, we are on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone. I'm here with my very special guests, Audace Garnett and Evelyn Hicks. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me, Rita.
Of course. And Evelyn, this is my first time speaking to you, but you know, those of you who have tuned in to Frida's World and According to RP, who are veterans, should recognize Audace's voice.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Of course. So just a little background, everyone. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And, you know, oftentimes when we talk about domestic violence, we kind of talk about it generally. We focus on, you know, women, but we fail to really address the fact that domestic violence, one, can affect everyone, but that it affects males and it affects, you know, the youth. And so, you know, I'm really excited to have these two guests, advocates in the community, to talk to us a little bit more about domestic violence and how it affects males and how it affects the youth. But before we get into too deep, I want to ask each one of you to just tell us a little bit about yourselves, who you are, where you're from, and what exactly you do.
Sure. So I'll start first. Again, my name is Audace Garnett. I'm an advocate and community member. I reside in Jamaica, Queens, but I was born in Guyana, South America, but I've spent most of my life here in the United States. I've worked in this movement for over 15 years. One of my career stops at the DA's office is where I met Rita, at the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, where we worked in the Domestic Violence Unit. I'm very passionate about this topic, and I'm just really excited to be here to talk about it. I founded a organization called Ascension Advocacy and Consulting in 2017, so that I could provide awareness and information and education to my community around this issue, because it's primarily impacting us. So thank you again, Rita, for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Evelyn Hicks of Shades of Love Empowerment Group. I was born and raised in South Jamaica, Queens. I've been Odeus's friend for about, over
30 years.
Wow. At least 30 years. Yeah. Wow. Oh my God, 30 years. And I'm currently a single mother. I am a community advocate, and I've had a passion for community and the betterment of our people and the children, the future.
Okay. Thank you so much, Evelyn. Now, again, I'm so excited to have you here as well. As much as I love Audace, but I love to have, you know,
new people, right?
Yeah, new people to talk about
this
topic.
My first time on a podcast, so I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
Well, I'm honored to be the person to introduce you to the world of podcasting.
Thank you. It means so much to me.
Awesome.
So, Audace, I know a little bit about how, you know, you're connected to DV, you know, because you used to work at the DA's office where we work together, and you have your company. But Evelyn, what's your connection to domestic violence?
Well, Rita, like I said, I am a single mother, and I'm a single mother because my child's father was killed as a result of a domestic violence relationship.
Oh, wow.
And so I have just recently had a passion, you know, discovered that, hey, I might want to be an advocate, because there aren't many advocates, support groups for men who are experiencing domestic violence, which is really sad. As I was doing my research, because we're actually having a domestic violence event, and I'm bringing the aspect of domestic violence and men. And as I'm doing my research, I found that there's little to no support for the men. Wow. And there's a large population of men who are experiencing domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I'm connected.
Yeah.
And you know what? What I love about this is that you are a woman that's coming out and saying, listen, we need to think about the men, right? It's not another man that's saying, hey, we got to talk about our brothers. Like, you are a woman who is saying, we have to talk about domestic violence towards men. And that's so interesting to me.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I commend you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I want to kind of go in just, you know, just to go back to the basics a little bit, right? Because, you know, we have people who are listening for the first time. This might be the first time that they've ever heard a discussion on domestic violence. So let's talk about, you know, what domestic violence actually is, and then maybe go into what are some of the different forms of DV. Because I know for the most part, when we think about domestic violence, we just think about black and blue eyes. We think about the physical violence, but there's so much more to it. So maybe if we can get into that.
Sure, sure. I'll touch on that. So I don't want to bog anybody down with definitions, but what domestic violence is when one person in a relationship has power over the other one. So it's about power and control, right? And this is not to be confused with what conflict is, right? Because conflict is something that occurs in every relationship, right? Arguments and disagreements happen, right? But then you need to come to some type of resolution. But domestic violence is about power and control. So telling you what to do, what to wear, who you can talk to, right? Who you can connect with. And what that may look like is intimidation. So throwing things at you, slamming doors, punching walls, right? Isolation, not allowing you to be around your friends, not allowing you to get on social media and connect with others. Emotional abuse, calling you names, you're fat, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're ugly, you're never going to be anything, right? Economic abuse, taking your money, right? Using your social security number to do scams. We see a lot of scamming, right? Taking your social security number to do various things, forcing you to cash checks or bust down checks, right? We see sexual violence, which is something that we often don't talk about, and it's something that we need to talk about early on. But, you know, forcing you to have sex against your will, forcing you to have sex with others, and so on and so forth. Forcible touching, using children, right? Threatening to take your children away, right? Threatening to call Child Protective Services or ACS on you, so on and so forth. And the physical abuse is what we oftentimes see, the black and blue. But we need to talk about those other elements that take shape. And then there's technology abuse, which we could probably touch on, you know, as we continue having this conversation. But, you know, telling who you could talk to on social media and, you know, impersonating you, stalking you, harassing you, exposing your nude photos, so on and so forth. So it takes so many different shapes and forms. So thank you for starting out with just asking what it is.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I think that, you know, in order for us to truly be informed, for us to either, you know, be able to identify what's going on, we kind of have to know what it is. Because, you know, this is how the society works, right? Game of telephone, like nobody really knows unless you know. So I think it's helpful to dispel some of these myths of what people have believed domestic violence to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I know, you know, we're going to get into the conversations of, you know, male domestic violence and youth, but in terms of like who does domestic violence affect, right? Because as we're dispelling myths here, I think a lot of times people think that only, you know, the working class or poor people, and more importantly, poor minorities experience domestic violence. But let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure, sure. So domestic violence does not discriminate. It can impact anyone. Doesn't matter what your race, class, gender is, your sex is. Domestic violence can impact anyone. However, there are barriers in place that prevent people from leaving these relationships, right? So if I'm in a domestic violence relationship and my partner that's abusing me is the breadwinner, it's going to be a lot harder for me to leave that relationship, right? Or if I'm in that relationship and I don't have an education and I'm unable to obtain a job where I could be gainfully employed, I may be subject to stay in that relationship. Or if I'm in that relationship and I'm a person that does not have documentation to be in the United States and that person holds citizenship, I may be fearful of leaving because where am I going to get a job? Where is community? How am I going to be supported, right? And then if you throw children into that mix, that's, you know, a whole nother element. But I'd like to highlight that disturbingly, Black women are 2.5 times more likely to be murdered by men than our counterparts. And that's the overwhelmingly majority of these cases are 92% times the person that we're in a relationship with. So Black femicide is a huge issue. We recently saw that case up in Harlem where that woman was, you know, leaving her baby shower. She was in a new relationship, I believe, and her former partner, who was extremely abusive, she had multiple orders of protections against him. He came and shot her in her head. So Black femicide is happening at alarming rates. So I just wanted to highlight that point.
No, and that's so important to, you know, because sometimes we need the numbers, right? You know, say that, oh, Black women are more likely. But when I think when you put the numbers together, people are like, wow, like this is actually real.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
man.
Absolutely.
Now, Evelyn, I want to kind of talk about the male domestic violence piece here, because again, you know, when we think about who does domestic violence affect, most people, I would say, would not think men experience domestic violence, right? In fact, they will see them as only being the aggressors and never on the other side of the track. So if you could just maybe share a little bit about your story as to what happened with your child's father and how that then motivated you to start this movement to raise awareness for male domestic violence?
Well, Rita, I'll start by throwing out some numbers. One in every 9 men are in domestic violent relationships.
Wow.
Okay, 26,000 men are officially listed as victims of domestic violence in Germany. Okay, 25% of the men in Mexico are in and are victims of domestic violence. And so in Kenya, Nigeria, and Ghana, economic abuse is often the trigger for abuse in the relationship by women. You know, women are abusing because they don't have any jobs, immigration papers, things of that nature. So there are some alarming numbers globally of men experiencing domestic violence, but no one talks about it.
No.
My child's father, I was in a relationship with him for 7 years. We conceived the child, it didn't work out. We parted ways. And he was in and out of jobs and things of that nature, where he moved down closer to his family in a rural area, and he met someone. And my child's father, you know, he was a sweet, low-tempered type of guy. He always wanted to assume the position of the savior, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the position of most guys in domestic violent relationships. First of all, we look at guys as protectors, strong, but we discount the fact that men can be vulnerable to emotional. You know, even when we are raising our sons, sometimes we tell them not to cry, man up. And so he met someone and he was in and out of jobs and things of that nature. So they moved in together. When I think about it, it's just like, oh my God, they moved in together. She pulled the card of the victim. I've experienced domestic violence. Mm-hmm. My family doesn't interact with me. I'm all alone out here. And so immediately guys like my child's father, they take to that, you know, and they had this relationship. And before you knew it, she was pregnant. And next thing you know, they were actually married. And I would try to get in contact with him concerning my child, and I couldn't. I would try to contact him on Facebook, Instagram, however, and I couldn't get in contact with him. And I used to think that it was him that, like, you don't want to be in contact with your child, you know, and that was the isolation part of it. Mm-hmm. And he called me June of 2020. He wanted to apologize for the mistakes he made with us and my child. And she grabbed the phone and she said, yeah, I think that he wants to come up there with you. I will send him up there. And mind you, this was 2020. So this was in the height of COVID. And so I said, I don't think that's a good idea. She had just had the baby in May. I said, I don't think that's a good idea. Him coming up here, COVID is very rampant in New York. And, you know, as Father's Day is coming up, you don't think that he should spend the first Father's Day with your child? And this was a FaceTime conversation. And he was in the background. And his face really displayed, help me. But I was so focused in on her. I knew something was going on, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. I was like, this is a crazy conversation to be having. And after that conversation, I never spoke to him again. I was sending him messages. Things had passed, like my daughter's birthday, and I didn't hear from him. And the next thing I know, on October 12th of 2020, we just come up on a year of his death, I got a call that he was dead and that she had stabbed him.
Wow.
So I came up on it and I was just like blown away. And, you know, when you hear this news, everything started to flash. That conversation. When they first met, she had mistakenly FaceTimed and called me, but I realized that it wasn't a mistake that she called me and they were on FaceTime and she was showing me him laying in the bed together. Things that when me and him were together would have been, we wouldn't have done anything like that. He didn't take me as a guy who liked to be displayed in that manner. She had a drinking problem. He didn't really like women who were like too loud and obnoxious and drunk and stuff like that. So it was really surprising to me that he was even entertaining this girl. And so when I went to bury him, when I went down to go bury him, I found out all these stories, all these incidents that happened between them. And I didn't even know, you know, he didn't confide those things in me. There were issues with the family where she was really isolating him from his family. She was creating situations that were isolating him from his family. And it was nothing his family could do, you know, because either they weren't aware or they were aware, and because they might too have had a situation where they were in a domestic violent relationship and how much of a struggle it becomes to leave.
Right.
But, you know, like the cycles of violence, you know, the intimidation, the isolation, the emotional abuse, the economic abuse, the sexual abuse, and even, you know, using the children. They had a child together. She also had an other daughter that my child's father became that daughter's savior because the mother was abusive. The older child used to hide in her room when her mother's out and about drinking and being violent. And when my child's father would come home from work or his outings, she would finally come out because she saw him as the savior, the protector. She felt safe when he was around. And so, like I said, I just we're coming up on a year of this, and in conjunction with Odeus and another colleague, I really started to become aware of how much and how prevalent this issue is.
Right.
You know?
I mean, this, and I, you know, my condolences, you know, to you. I mean, the fact that it's going to be a year, right, in only a couple of days, I could only imagine, you know, the emotions that you're experiencing all over again, right?
Right.
And it's, I mean, I'm listening to this and like my skin's crawling and I'm like, this is crazy. Cause you know, I'm thinking maybe this is a situation that happened a couple of years ago, but this is literally last year. Yeah. In the middle of a global pandemic, right?
So, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on with that. But, you know, some of the things that you mentioned towards the end with respect to not knowing, right? Him not confiding and letting you know, or I guess maybe anyone know, what was really happening in the household, the isolation that was taking place that people probably didn't even notice because everybody's about minding their own business. And
yes,
I mean, you know, with all of that, I guess I kind of want to touch on those points, right? Those red flags. We talk about red flags, you know, when we're talking about women, certain things to look out for. But when it comes to, I guess, the male domestic violence, are the red flags similar, or are there certain aspects of that dynamic that we should pay attention to more? Like how can we, you know, identify when this is happening to one of our brothers, uncles, fathers, cousins, etc.?
So the dynamics are always the same, Rita. Everybody's scenario is different, but the dynamics are always the same. The elements of power and control will all be the same across the board, right? Mm-hmm. And men fear coming forward because of the shame and the stigma that's attached to it. Women the same, right? But men more so, because men are seen as strong, right?
Right.
The provider, as Evelyn mentioned, the person that's supposed to be the protector of the household, all of those different things. So that's what, you know, that's one of the barriers that prevent men from coming forward. But the warning signs are similar, right? Mm-hmm. If that person seems afraid, right, of their partner, right? They go along with everything that their partner says and does. Maybe they have to answer the phone every time their partner calls, right? Mm-hmm. You see them calling constantly, and every time that partner calls, they got to pick up no matter what, right? Their partner is has a temper, they're jealous, possessive, doesn't allow you to have your own life, right? You're losing more and more air in your life, and they're gaining more and more power. Physical violence, they show up with bruises, right? And all of these things that they can't explain. But the isolation is something that you always wanna look out for.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wanna put that. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add, Evelyn.
Yeah, I wanna piggyback off of the like the tempers and the jealousy and the possessiveness
mm-hmm.
of the perpetrators. Like Odea said, it is across the board the same. She was very jealous and possessive of him. And often men think that, oh, she just loves me so much.
Right.
She's crazy over me, you know. Oh, she's head over heels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a smoke and mirror. You know, it runs a little bit more deeper than just she's crazy over me. Well, the fact that she's actually an abuser and actually crazy, you know, the harassing phone calls. Like I said, early on in their relationship, she mistakenly called me, but it was no mistake. She wanted to harass and mark her territory is what right. she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't think about that at the time, you know? And often people, young and old, experience that, like, oh, you know, when the girlfriend calls back, like, yeah, what you doing with such and such? He is mine. Don't you come over here, else I will cut your car, key your car, and stuff like that. We often just bypass those things and think, you know, oh, she's just so sprung. And actually, she's, like you said, marking her territory, and she's actually a perpetrator of domestic violence. But it all starts with awareness, you know, and conversations. I would have never known the depth of what we're talking about had I not partnered with Odeus and my other colleague, or even started to do my own research. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what happened. And this happens so often, and we brush it off. I will say that society, TV and media plays a huge part in how we look at the men who are just experiencing domestic violence.
Right.
On TV, violence against men is portrayed in humor. We laugh it off. In society, as I'm doing my research, I'm calling friends like, do you know anybody who's in a domestic violent relationship, a man? And they're like, really like laughing, like, no one's gonna come forth and say, hey, my girl was whooping my butt, you know? And I was like, wow, I mean, this is a fact, you know? It's a shame in coming forward. And it's just very sad. Though I am concerned and know so many women who experience domestic violence, I have a newfound just, oh my God, empathy and sympathy for the men who are experiencing it too.
Mm-hmm.
Often there are men who, for instance, I have a cousin. I was just talking to her last night in her situation. Her child's father, he doesn't deal with their child. He doesn't deal with any of his family, the isolation.
Mm.
She, and I was telling her about what I'm doing, and she said, you know what? I think he's going through it. So me telling her the symptoms and how it goes triggered her to, like, wow, these are the warning signs.
Right.
And maybe this is what he's going through and just not able to come out, because he is a big man in stature.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looked, if he was to come forward, he probably would be looked at as like weak and just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Soft. All of
soft. Soft. Yeah, a simp.
A pansy.
Right.
And it's very sad, yeah. But it's very common, Rita.
Mm-hmm,
it's
it is.
Very common. It's more common than we think.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you guys worked toward, you know, talking about the signs and the warning signs and all that stuff, and we've kind of focused in on, like, the isolation aspect and the harassing aspect, you know, this is why it's important to talk about these things, because I can say that I've encountered, you know, either friends or family members who were males who had this weird dynamic, right? You never saw them, you know, and a lot of times on the outside, we're like, this man doesn't talk to his kids. He's not engaging his kids. He's a deadbeat. Yeah. Meanwhile, it could be because the wife, the woman that's in that yeah. person's life is literally probably threatening this man, right? And I'm not giving, you know, I'm not giving excuses now for men to say, oh yeah, that's it. That's why I don't take care of my kid. But,
right.
you know, but that could be something that, you know, people could start looking into. And,
right.
You know, I know a lot of, you know, guys from my past that, they had women in their lives that, you know, were constantly calling them, like every 5 minutes. Like, and if they didn't, mm-hmm. if they didn't answer, it's like, you know, the end of the world. But then they would play it off and say, oh, you know how women get, if I don't answer this call right now, it's going to be a problem later. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wonder what the problem later was. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Rita, that's how I felt. I felt like you said, it's like he doesn't want to spend time with his child. He doesn't call his child. And as I became aware, these were warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
I just never knew.
Right.
You know, I never knew the warning signs of domestic abuse. But he fits the criteria, you know. And it's really sad. And we have to have these conversations more and more, and because it's an issue. Mm-hmm. And our uncles, our brothers, our fathers, ours are suffering.
Yeah.
And they're going through it
in silence, right? Because they can't even lean on each other men. They can't even lean on each other to talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sad part. Oh, mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's heavy right there, right? We're I mean, domestic violence is a heavy topic, but you know, when we're talking about male domestic violence, you know, I think that for me, I'm seeing it, you know, at least we see women, you know, starting to come out. Survivors are coming out. There's support groups, like you said, there are forums, they're at the forefront of the conversation, but unfortunately men don't have that safe space, even within their tight male friend circles, mm-hmm. to even talk about it. But I want to move on to the teens, because I know that's another heavy topic. And nowadays, you know, when we were working, I know you were working heavily in the youth domestic violence part, and I had done some work with you there. So I was able to kind of sit in on some of these stories and, you know, and handle some of these cases. But, you know, we don't hear too much about, you know, youth domestic violence, right? So not just teens, but like, you know, early adults. So I was just want to just say youth domestic violence. We don't hear about it at all. In fact, I think that a lot of parents and, you know, those of us who are a little older, when we see the young people acting up, we just say that they're acting up. They're acting foolish. They're it's not that serious.
Right.
It is serious, right? And I want you to talk about youth domestic violence, and you know what you've seen, and like really what are some of the specific, I guess, aspects of it, right? Because now in the age of social media, and you know our youth are on social media, you know there's an aspect of domestic violence. I think we talked about technology earlier that's akin to this group.
Absolutely. Yes, Rita. So I was the teen services coordinator at the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, and, you know, got the I had the privilege and the opportunity to work with many young people who had this experience. I also worked at Day One, which is the only organization in New York that primarily works with young people 16 to 24 who are having this experience. And I want to say that one out of three young people are having this experience. Right. Why? They're having this experience because of what they're exposed to. I mean, you know what? There's no reason. Let me not even put out a reason. We're modeling for young people, right?
Right.
And they're seeing how to navigate relationships. So the elements of domestic violence are the same for young people. All of the tactics are the same. The isolation, the emotional abuse, the sexual violence, the intimidation. The technology abuse is something new within, I want to say, the past 15 years that we've been. There's an uptick in technology abuse. So damaging your phone, right? Creating false profiles to intimidate you and to harass you. We see a lot of revenge porn. We call it revenge porn in the media, but it's called non-consensual intimate image sharing. That's the legal name for it. We see young people sharing nude photos of their partner, right? And what does that cause? That causes a huge impact in the life of the victim, right? Because now their nude photos being shared around the school, it's being shared on various platforms. And how does that impact them emotionally? We see a lot of young people committing suicide as a result of these things. So the technology abuse is something that we're seeing a rise in and an uptick, you know, with these just violent acts happening online. But yeah, it's something that's, you know, prevalent in youth communities, and it's important that we speak up around it because young people are watching us. This may be their first relationship, so they don't have the experience sometimes to compare what a healthy or unhealthy relationship is, right? Mm-hmm. Then add on to what they're seeing in the media, right? Where are the healthy relationships that we're sharing with them? What if they grew up in a community or a household where there is no example of what healthy looks like? So what are their examples? So it's important that we talk about that. Just having this conversation, Rita, it's getting me choked up because domestic violence is not something that just started today. Teen dating violence is not something that started last week. You know, people in my family have experienced teen dating violence when they were young. And I'm talking about in the 30s and 40s, in 1930s and 40s. So it's not nothing new. And we shouldn't blame young people for what they're experiencing, because, again, they're just modeling after what they see.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I think that, that is a very critical point to make, right? Because they're youth, they're young people, right? They haven't even experienced life. And so the fact that they're going through this, like this behavior, like you said, came from somewhere. They were they're modeling it from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, it's, again, you know, when you talk about this, it's a very sad topic to me when we're talking about the teens.
It really is.
To go through this.
It really is, Rita. I just want to add something. As even this conversation, it's really bringing awareness. And I hope that the listeners out there are really listening, because I'm even becoming more and more aware for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm no expert. I've only taken on this role because it's prevalent in my community, number one. Number two, the situation with my child's father. And now we're talking about this teen abuse, you know, domestic violence abuse. Mm-hmm. I actually know a young couple today that I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. They are in a domestic violent relationship and the woman is the perpetrator.
Wow. Wow. Even in the young domestic violence landscape, we have young women who are perpetrators. This is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter what your race, age, sex is, how you identify. You know, it's happening in so many relationships. So it's important that we keep an eye out for it. And we can't just look for black and blue eyes.
Right.
We can't look for black and blue marks on your arms, right? Because then we're going to miss it, right? Mm-hmm. We got to look for the other elements that take place in these relationships so that we can, you know, provide that person with support so they can get the help that they need.
So how then, you know, I do want to, you know, make sure that we address those who are victims of domestic violence. But, you know, there are many of us out here who, you know, we're always wanting to help, right? We're always like, we want to help. We want to be able to be that shoulder. We want to be that support system, but it's a delicate topic, right? It's a delicate issue. How can we, as, I guess, the outsiders, the family members, the friends, the acquaintances, how can we support individuals who are currently experiencing domestic violence?
So, Rita, studies say that it takes up to 7 times for a person to actually leave in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to think of it as this, right? If you first meet a person and you're in a relationship, you start dating them, and let's say within the first week, you see, you know, some type of red flag, or they slap you or something like that, you're more likely to leave that situation, right? Mm-hmm. Because you haven't built any bonds with them. You don't have any ties to them. A relationship really hasn't been established, right? But, you know, we have to think of it as this, right? This person is someone that you spent time with, built a relationship with, been intimate with. So there are ties there, right? And there are bonds there. And it's important that we provide compassion for victims, because it's not that easy to leave, right? This is about power and control. And they say the most dangerous time for a person to leave a relationship is at the height of you know, of that relationship, because mm-hmm. that person is losing their power and control, and things will usually escalate.
Right.
So let that person know that they're not alone. Number one, what they're experiencing is not their fault, and help is available, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to leave the relationship immediately. They could connect to an advocate that could provide them with free and confidential support. And then they could create a safety plan so that they can then figure out how they can leave, right? Maybe they need to save up a couple of dollars, you know? Mm. Maybe they need to get their high school diploma, right? Maybe they need to figure out if they have family or friends living in another state where they can relocate and figure out how they can, you know, get to them and do it safely, right?
Right.
A lot of times people don't want to involve the police, right? That's a touchy subject in our community, right? Law enforcement is not always the response that people want. So there are other avenues, right? Maybe you just want to go to family court and get an order of protection, right? After you figured out your safety plan. So maybe you do want to call 911, right? But you need to figure out you know, and then in time, what spaces are available in your community? What safe houses, what shelters are available? What advocacy and support are around you? So there are services available. I'll share some of that towards the end, but letting that person know that they're not alone and help is available and what they're experiencing is not their fault is a really, really great start.
I think that piece is important, letting them know that it's not their fault. I think that a lot of times, you know, we mean well, but our delivery is what can be triggering, right? I mean,
right.
When we're saying that, you know, you should have
like, not me. That couldn't be me, right? My cousin was in that relationship and she left. She punched him in his face and left.
Yeah, you know, and it's not,
that's not everybody's easy. Situation.
It's not that easy.
Right.
Be supportive,
be non-judgmental, encourage them, right? Let them know that they're worth being in a healthy relationship. Let them know that you're concerned. It's not always about, you know, cutting off your line of support because they don't leave. Give them the chance to realize what they're experiencing is not okay.
Right. To actually sit with it, right?
Yeah. You know, helping them acknowledge that, you know, I understand you're in a scary and difficult situation, and you know, empathy, you know, knowing that it's just not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to be like neutral sometimes. We often, like you said, I wouldn't do that, couldn't be me, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You have to have compassion,
mm-hmm.
not only for domestic violence, having compassion in all aspects of life.
Yes,
you know, putting yourself in other people's shoes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. when you put yourself in other people's shoes, you know, it changes the trajectory of your delivery, and how you think towards situations when you actually put yourself in someone else's shoes. I even, you know, thought about the shoes of the perpetrator.
Right.
Why are they abusers?
Mm-hmm.
Who abused them?
What happened to you?
Why are they like this? But sometimes it's like you do that and then see, that's where the victim has compassion for mm-hmm. the perpetrator.
Right.
Like she's just lost. This is what she saw.
A rough childhood.
She had a rough childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, but I always like to put myself in other people's shoes and think about the situation before I make a solid evaluation of things, you know, mm-hmm. being non-judgmental,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
You know, and be encouraging, you know, like you can do it. And you know, you can do some other things on your side, on your part, like making sure when you bring this issue that you have some help. Here's a hotline, here's a shelter, here's a this, that, mm-hmm. you know. And let them know that you're really concerned and, you know, you want to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's all important things, all important things. I wanted to now kind of shift as we're winding down. Just two more points I definitely want to touch on. But for the victims out there, those who are currently in domestic violence situations, what advice can we give them?
Again, Rita, I'm always going to go back to those three points. You are not alone, right? There's nothing that you have done in that relationship that justifies what is happening to you. You do not deserve what you are experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, help is available, right? When we think about services, especially in our community, right? We feel, you know, oh, somebody's going to diagnose me as being weak, or somebody's going to say that, you know, something's wrong with me because I had this experience. No one's going to judge you. This can happen to anyone. And help is available. There's free and confidential help. In fact, if you're in New York City and you're having this experience, Safe Horizon has a hotline. That phone number is 800-621-HOPE, 1-800-621-HOPE. And you can connect to that hotline. They provide free and confidential services. They'll connect you to an advocate. To support services. We have family justice centers. We are so rich with so many services in New York. Every borough has a family justice center, mm-hmm. and you can walk into the family justice center. Because of COVID, things may have changed, but Google Family Justice Center in Bronx, Brooklyn, whatever borough you live in, Queens, and find out what their hours are and how you can walk in and receive support. They even provide support to children who have witnessed domestic violence, which is something that we often don't talk about, right? We're always talking about children are resilient. Children will get past the situation. No, children are not resilient, right? Children grow up and they hold on to these traumas, right? And they have to deal with them and navigate them as adults. So it's important that we not minimize what children are witnessing and say that they're resilient and they'll get past it. They won't remember it. They do. And they carry that stuff into their relationships and into school and into every area of life. So it's important that we get the help that we need. There's free and confidential services. There's Day One as well. Day One is a nonprofit. They work directly with teens. They provide support. They provide presentations within schools. Education and awareness is a huge part of this conversation. Rita, I thank you so much for always reaching out to have these type of conversations because they're not being had. Right. But Day One provides that within schools. And it's important that we fund programs like that so that young people can know what's going on, you know, in our society and in their lives and in their homes.
Right, right. So I wanted to bring up this last point. So we often talk about raising awareness, right? And this is not even just for DV, but with everything. Raise awareness. But what does raising awareness actually look like when it comes to domestic violence? You know, I know that every year around October, we have these specials. You know, there's commercials and forums and whatnot. But in terms... to really get to a point where society can reduce these incidences of domestic violence, what does true awareness look like?
Well, Rita, I'll answer that. You know, having conversations with Shades of Love Empowerment Group, one of my slogans is community conversations that bridge awareness and healing. You know, once we bring the awareness, we can... start the healing process. You know, we need to start having conversations in our community about healthy relationships. And not only that, this needs to be every month. You know, this mm-hmm. needs to happen every month, just not October. We need to have these conversations more frequently.
Right.
Taking our, you know, and talking to our children early about what healthy and unhealthy relationships are, and being a good role model, you know, of good and healthy relationships, projecting a good relationship with your child, you know? And so, and today we're connected with technology, so we can use examples of unhealthy relationships in media to spark conversations and with teens and stuff like, you know, to make it relatable, like for instance, Tory Lanez and Megan Thee Stallion. And, mm-hmm. and there's been a few, who else? Quavo and Saweetie. And everyone listens to them. All mm-hmm. these teens listen to them.
Yep.
And they follow what they're saying.
Yep.
And doing. And wearing. And so we can, we just have to have the conversation. We have to stay connected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
And I think that that's definitely important. And I think that what you mentioned as well, the fact that this should be an every month conversation, but that we should talk to our kids about it because our kids Absolutely. Are watching us. And I mean, I know we never like to put responsibility on the artists and the rappers and the people out there, but a part of me sometimes thinks that, you know what, there is a responsibility, right? Because you're public right. figures and you have these kids who are listening to your lyrics, who are watching you on social medias. Like, I feel like there has to be some sort of responsibility because even if you're the best parent in the world, kids will still be influenced by what they see, what their right. friends like, right?
Right, absolutely.
So yeah, I think that mm-hmm. as a society, we have to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. There needs to be a balance. I don't want to date myself or age myself, but I mean, I listen to rap music growing up, right? Mm-hmm. I still do, right? But I have to be selective, right? But there mm-hmm. needs to be a balance. There needs to be a balance, and we need to start talking about the unhealthy things that young people are picking up through media. Right. And it's not just rap music, it's everything. We right. see it, you know, you turn on Netflix, right? You turn on Hulu, everything you know, involves violence or some form of degradation of women. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we're having these conversations, and using media is a really great way to spark these conversations because, you know, we're all connected. Again, like Evelyn mentioned, we're all connected.
Right, right.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, thank you guys so much for just taking your time out to talk about this important topic. But yes, I really want to commend you guys just for the work that you're doing in your communities on this topic.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, because it's not easy, absolutely. Right? It's not easy working with community.
Ooh, Lord, it's not. But it's a challenge that we're willing to face. And we look forward to, you know, just seeing the change before our eyes, you know.
Definitely. So, yep. Now, I want you guys to just share your social media handles, because I'm sure there are people who are like, oh, I want to connect with these women. You know, I have an upcoming event I might want them to talk at, or maybe that, you know, now that Evelyn is in the world of podcasts, you might get some,
yes,
you know,
yes, Rita. What I mean?
You might get some requests there. So let's share, yes, some of our information.
So I don't have any social media handles because I'll be relocating soon. Okay. But I'm gonna let Evelyn share her information.
Well, my Facebook, I have a new Facebook page. It's Shades of Love Empowerment Group. Okay. And on Instagram, it's Shades of Love EG. Yeah, those are my handles.
Okay, yep. Cool. So definitely be adding that into the description. But again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. But I just can't stop thanking you guys, because I think that the conversation that we had today touched on a variety of aspects. And I think that those who have listened to it will say, okay, this is not the typical DV topic, you know,
convo. Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you for allowing us to share, Rita. I really appreciate it, as always. Thank you so much for building awareness.
Thank you, Rita, for having me. This is my first time. I hope I did okay.
Oh, you did good, girl. You did good.
Amazing. This is my very first time even speaking publicly about the situation with my child's father, and just diving into domestic violence, and I'm sitting here just thinking, like, oh my God, this is a big issue, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. among so many issues we have, but this one is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're seeing it on the news. You know, every other day there's a report of a young woman being killed, a young man being killed, teens committing suicide.
Yeah.
You know, on, you know, over relationships. So we definitely have to, yes, have to keep this topic at the forefront.
Absolutely. Right. Okay, Rita, thank you. And thank you to your listeners for tuning in.
You're welcome. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I'll talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.